Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm Corey Fleck, your host for this weekend show. I first just want to thank everybody again for tuning in, spending some time with us this weekend, as I am going to focus a fair bit on the resource sector, but then also just look at the continued broad melt up in the broad averages. Again, please visit our website, kereport.com, throughout the week, as especially in these last couple weeks, I've had a lot of company interviews. And why I bring on so many companies, especially some of these new companies, is to really get your guys' thoughts on them and see kind of what you're interested in and what you are all focusing on for where you're balancing your portfolio, especially in the resource sector. I'm kicking off this weekend's show with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Just to bring everybody up to speed, Matt's been on the show a number of times. He runs what really is a resource-focused fund, and that's where we're going to start. Broadly looking at resources here, Matt, and balancing out the broad underperformance of precious metals, really since the tail end of summer, around August, compared to base metals and energy metals. Really, those commodities have taken off, and the precious metals have more or less been forgotten, at least in that about 5 month time frame. What's your thought on this environment?
Thanks for having me back on the program here, Corey, and happy new year to you and your listeners. You're absolutely right. There's been a distinct bifurcation, you could say, in performance between the base and energy metals relative to the precious metal brethren, gold and silver. And you nailed it. I think we started to see this start to occur around August timeframe. So in Q3 of last year. I will say from the MJG fund perspective, we got as high as 75% weighting towards precious metals in the July-August timeframe. And I actually made the decision to forgo any additional precious metal positions for the foreseeable future. That had less to do with trying to call, you know, market timing. It was lucky in that respect. Less to do with that and more to do with the fact that we felt I felt overexposed to PMs and wanted to bring the portfolio more into balance. But that's definitely worked out to our favor because of forgoing any new gold or silver focused investments, taking some light profits, and seeing outperformance amongst the base and energy metal names within our portfolio. We're closer to a 50-50 split now between precious metals and the rest of the metal market. So in terms of where do I see this going as we head into 2021? I mean, I think the energy metals, industrial metals, have definitely benefited from this risk on, almost euphoric sentiment that we're seeing in the market right now. And as long as that continues, they will probably continue to outperform. And so I do feel gold and silver investors, especially those that have been in this market for a while, are quite patient. And we have a very good 4 to 5 years, even decade ahead of us. But I wouldn't be surprised to see this underperformance relative to other metals persist for another six to nine months, potentially until we see the next risk-off move within the broader markets. And we can touch on that a little bit later in this interview. But as long as the music's playing and investors are still speculating across the board and feeling really good about their fortunes, we'll probably see this run continue. But it will reverse at some point, and we're certainly still very exposed to gold and silver within the portfolio, and we'll continue to be so.
Okay, so it sounds like you're still using gold and silver or your gold and silver positions as that protection from a broad correction, let's call it. Again, something we will get into in the next segment. But when it comes to some of these other metals markets, you've outlined already a few of these markets that have done well, and the stocks really in the last 3 weeks, let's say, have really played catch-up, especially in terms of base metal stocks and even some of these lithium stocks I've seen as flying. Where are you focusing some of your positions outside of the precious metals? Which actual commodities and what stage of stocks do you like?
Sure. So again, and I don't want to sound like a broken record here, I've said this on your program before, but I really try to, as much as possible, avoid getting caught up in the narratives of a specific metal or a specific business model or what have you. Really, it does come down to the people involved with the individual story. And so I'd much rather invest in a high quality management team focused on a high quality, say, lead asset, you know, or zinc asset, you know, some boring metal that's not getting much attention, than to just chase after the high flying metals of the day. That said, in terms of where we do have the majority of our exposure at the moment outside of gold and silver, it's copper at about 26% of the weighted portfolio. And then we have uranium that has crossed into double digits in December due to outperformance amongst a couple of our holdings there. Nickel's another metal of particular interest. I actually feel our nickel weighting is a bit low within the portfolio, all things considered. So we will probably be bumping that up a little bit in the coming weeks and months here. But that can be done just by adding to our existing nickel-focused positions and not necessarily adding a new name into the portfolio. So I'm really trying to stay disciplined here. I think that the best times to have made these bets would have been, again, in the wake of the coronavirus sell-off in March of April of last year, or even well before that. And so I'm not looking to rush into a whole bunch of new positions at the moment. Maybe we'll make, you know, one or two big placement bets this quarter. But if nothing spectacular crosses the plate, I'm plenty happy with the names that we have in the portfolio. And I'll probably just continue mostly to ride with the horses we have already.
Okay, I think that makes sense too, because again, a lot of these horses have started to run, especially outside of the precious metals, right? And I think you made a very good comment there, is that in terms of your low weighting in nickel, you're not necessarily looking just to find new companies, right? You're happy to stick to the ones that you know, because in all fairness, uranium, nickel, especially those two, and even copper, you can argue, it's a much smaller sector when it comes to stocks. So to be diversified, that can be harder, but it's also just important to stick to the names that you know. And is that the strategy then? Buy the dip, even though these markets are still running? If you do see a bit of a dip, that's your opportunity?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, you have to look at each stock on a case-by-case basis, right? I mean, there's you ask kind of specific business models that we're focused on, especially if you're willing to or looking to play the base and energy metal space. I always have a bias towards the royalty business model. And so I guess some potentially actionable advice here, well, not advice, but I guess insight. Nova Royalty is a name that has been our top performer really over the past 6 months and has driven a lot of the outperformance you've seen in the MJG portfolio. It's an interesting name. They're specifically focused on nickel and copper, and that's it. So very clean narrative. CEO Alex Sukernik, Chairman Brett Heath are doing a really good job of taking the long-term view here and emphasizing to the market that this is a company that is going to be around for 5 or 10 years here, and they want to build this into the Wheaton precious metals or into the Franco Nevada of the energy metal space. And so I think they're approaching their job well, and the stock's been on an absolute tear. It's really one of the hotter names out there at the moment. And that's definitely exciting for existing investors in the name. But if in terms of viewers, you know, watching that story or potentially having a position, I think it's also worth looking elsewhere. Maybe names that haven't had that, you know, doubling or tripling in the share price in the past eight weeks. And so, you know, names like potentially EMX or Altius Minerals, who are royalty co's, They don't necessarily have the same sexy narrative as say, a Nova. They're a bit more diversified with their focus on different metals. But I think there's a lot more potential value in those sorts of names. So I'd be careful, and I guess on the MGG front, we're at about 5% cash at the moment. I could see us bumping up closer to even 20% by mid-year, if not higher. So to your point about buying the dips, I do think it's smart timing to potentially take some profits and create a little bit of a war chest to give you both confidence and courage when we see that next big risk-off move in the markets, which will inevitably filter into our little niche here in junior resources. So you have to be prepared to take some pain when that occurs, and then it's also good to have some cash to deploy when appropriate.
Okay, so a couple of keys then that I just want to highlight in terms of some of these royalty companies. There has arguably been an explosion in terms of new royalty companies coming onto the scene, and you really do need to dive into A management and their asset portfolio, because some of these companies that say they're royalty companies, they aren't, or they hold maybe one royalty, which to me, you need a portfolio of royalties when you are that company just to continue to grow. So that's one aspect that I would say. Let's talk about then this potential of some sort of a risk-off episode for the broad averages. Look, there's no denying that euphoria is in these markets, sentiment levels are at highs, but these markets just keep on running. There's clearly a lot of money in the system. What would your strategy be, though, in terms of a risk-off event, a correction that happens in the markets that typically it does pull down pretty much everything across the board, depending on the degree of correction?
Yeah, I think your listeners involved in this space should be bracing themselves for 40, 50, 60% pullback in their junior resource portfolio at some point here in the relatively near future. And that might sound extreme to say at the moment, but I really think psychologically you have to go in with that mindset. So when it does happen, you react properly or you don't react and you don't panic and you don't sell at the bottom. So I that might sound extreme again to some of these listeners, but with the euphoria we're seeing out there, both within the junior resource space, but just in the broader markets. I mean, look at the activity amongst cryptocurrencies. Look at the SPAC market in the United States and how those just seem like investments you can't lose. Look at high flying Tesla and the rest of these growth stocks with very sexy narratives for the future here. I personally, it's making me nervous, and I recommend that all of your listeners go read Jeremy Grantham's latest investor letter. He sent it out about a week ago, I believe. And you can go to gmo.com, you sign up, and you can access it. And Grantham is a very, very experienced investor. He's in his 80s. He founded and is still involved with GMO, which is a multi-$100 billion asset manager. And he's a statistician by trade. And has done really amazing work with calling bubbles in the past. Really, he just looks at the relationships between different asset price classes historically, and then compares it to the present time. And when he sees something getting way out of whack of what it's been historically, more often than not, that is a bubble. And so he was able to call the Japan bubble in the late 1980s, early 1990s. He was a couple years early for that, but he was absolutely right. He called the dot-com bubble in the late 90s, early 2000s. Again, he was early on that, but he was ultimately very right. And then he also was ahead on in terms of the 2008, subprime crisis and blow up during the great financial crisis. And he got his timing pretty spot on for that. And so, for a variety of reasons, he thinks that we are in the midst of another full-fledged bubble that will potentially go down in the history books here. And he issued a pretty stark warning where, in his mind, it's going to, the music's going to stop sometime here in the late spring or over the summer. Maybe once vaccines start to really get rolled out and people realize, hey, the economy's doing okay, we're somewhat back, but we're priced for perfection right now in the financial markets, and that's not right. So, what we'll see if he's ultimately right or not. I think it's a tricky game to try to time markets in this manner. But by the same token, we know generally where we are in the cycle, at least for the broader markets. And so because of that, I do think it would be it'd be smart to for investors to up their cash positions as we head into this year in anticipation of a major market sell-off for whatever the reason may be. And, you know, if I'm wrong on that point and an investor goes to even 30% cash, I was looking back at our 2020 performance here. We were up 113% over the course of 2020. And I'll be sending out the recent investor letter here with more performance details. But if we'd been at 30% cash the entire year, we'd still be up 80%, which is not too shabby. So I'd advise investors not to get too greedy here and to think about building up a cash hoard here to give them a little bit of dry powder for when markets get rough again, because they inevitably do. And then, yeah, the other quick point I'd make is look at your portfolio, each of your names individually, one by one, and think to yourself, just run the thought experiment. Is this a name that I'd be comfortable holding if it were to fall 40 to 50% in the next 6 to 8 weeks? Is this a name where I would be comfortable buying more, doubling down if this were to occur? Or is this a name where I would panic and probably sell at a loss? And so I think running that thought experiment and sticking to names that you have the conviction in that you'll be able to hold through the next period of turbulence, I think that'll serve people really well. That's what I'm certainly doing within our portfolio.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate those insights. And it really sounds like just building up a cash position, maybe taking some of the gains that you have off the table, locking those in, because we are due for some sort of a correction. But oh man, I can't tell you how many times I hear almost day after day that the correction is coming tomorrow. And this market continues to defy gravity in a sense. When it comes to junior mining investments, though, those are volatile in their own sense, let alone if we get some sort of a correction in the market. So in terms of your junior mining positions, then, are you trimming those positions maybe a little bit more aggressively if, say, they've already run, just to lock in some gains?
Yeah, again, I'll look at each name individually. I mean, one thing I'll look at pretty closely here is the company's working capital position relative to their market cap. And that's a really, you know, back of the envelope rough measure, but it is a measure of downside. And so, yeah, in these markets, I'd feel more comfortable investing in a company where, you know, half of their market cap or more is covered by cash and marketable securities, you know, versus other names that have, you know, very high valuations on paper, but not a lot of cash to work with. I mean, that's one of the beauties of EMX, which is a company I brought up earlier in this talk. And for the record, we are shareholders of EMX. But, you know, they still have close to 80 million Canadian in cash and marketable securities, to my knowledge. And so that covers a substantial chunk of their market cap. And then those kind of names, they do give me more confidence when things get ugly. You kind of know there's defined downside there. And so I think that's a helpful thing to look at.
So are there any other plays or individual stocks that you think have, well, A, cash in the bank, but also the right strategy in the right area that might be getting overlooked currently?
Good question. I mean, one name that, and again, these aren't recommendations. I'm just sharing what we're looking at. One name that we've invested in and that we've been strong supporters of is Kenderland Minerals. And they just went public a couple days ago. It's a company led by Zach Flood and Francis McDonald, two Canadian nationals, and they're two young geologists, but really well respected and really top tier mentors across the board, both geologically and in the capital market space. And this is kind of a similar company where they have, you know, $10 million in cash, you know, in working capital ready to go. We're looking at like a $40, $50 million market cap here. So it doesn't cover half of their market cap at all, but they do have that healthy working cap position, which provides, you know, some defined downside, but also just as importantly, plenty of runway before they have to raise their next financing. So if markets do get choppy, say mid-2021, they're not going to be in a position where they have to come back and raise when all the doors are shut in terms of new financing options. So that's another position, another advantage of having that working capital hoard. But they're, you know, utilizing the prospect generation business model, have a couple high profile partnerships in Quebec. The most interesting one is at their Frotet project with Sumitomo, who's earning 80% stake in the project. They've made an exciting grassroots discovery there. But they're also partnered with Sumitomo on a second Quebec asset, and then Newmont on an early stage but very large land package called Chibistouan. And so it's nice to have these marquee partners earning into projects. And then Kenneland also has a couple 100% owned projects in Alaska that at the moment they're considering drilling both of those this year with their own cash. So it's interesting. It's a little bit between of a mix between a prospect generation. It's a hybrid with discovery. So that can work relatively well in this market, because you can get the sizzle if they make a discovery on one of their 100% owned properties. But also if things get tough, they can scale back expenditures there and then just rely on their partners to continue putting money into the ground in Quebec. So that's another name that's interesting at the moment.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up here, Matt. But in full disclosure, I also hold Kenneland Minerals. I did not know Matt was even going to bring that one up. But hey, I appreciate that, Matt. You actually introduced me to that team, and I will be having them on the show early next week for a company introduction because it's an interesting story. Hey, Matt, it's great having you on the show. Thank you very much for all the time and some of your insights into the market. Great chatting with you. Have a great rest of your weekend.
You too, Corey. Thanks.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.